coming up, Fuzzball?
From Down Under.
Do or do not. There is no try.
G'day, mate. How you going? G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Fantha from Down Under, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. And I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. And this is on the Fantha Tracks Radio Network. And tonight we have the one, the only, Alan Zorg. That's right, better known as Jedi Zorg. And he's a very, very busy man because he has two amazing podcasts, which you've got to check out, of course. Idiots Array podcast, which he co-hosts with Ryder and Mark. And, of course, it is the one place I always go each week for Star Wars content. And you've got to also go and check out the amazing Jedis and Germs, which he also co-hosts. And believe it or not, he's a Star Wars fan. It's probably why he's on this here podcast to chat a little bit of Star Wars tonight. It's going to be part two of his chat with us here today. And we also have all the way from Starships, Sabres and Scoundrels, Darth Taxus, back also for part two of his chat with us here at the show. And we're going to be covering a little bit of Solo, a Star Wars story, and more. So let's get into it. Chatting a little bit of Star Wars with these two amazing podcasters and Star Wars fans. Alrighty, folks. So on episode 9 of the podcast, we had Alan Zorg on the show. And Alan is a dear friend of the show and also, of course, a long-time Star Wars fan. He's part of Idiots Array podcast, which has been going for about 3 years now. And, of course, it is the wonderful place to go and check out all kinds of conversations when it comes to the expanded universe, the Legends universe, that is, of course, and, of course, Star Wars in general. They cover everything from the books to the films, and the conversation is amazing. You're going to go and check it out. But here is part two of our chat with Alan, where we cover a lot more Star Wars, and at the end of the day, we cover a lot of fun. Here we go. I love it. I love it, man. That sort of character is so damn amazing, you know? Because at the end of the day, you could do a lot with Star Wars. You look at Luke, Last Jedi, really, you might as well just get Jeff Bridges in there. Hey, the dude is fishing.
We did an episode a few months back of we were asking our listeners to recast Qui-Gon Jinn, and instead of Liam Neeson, recast him, and the dude was one of them.
Wow.
Obi-Wan, dude.
I know you know who you're gonna get. Keanu Reeves. I am a Jedi.
Okay, Keanu Reeves was never a suggestion. I like that. I'm going to have to bring that to the
I'm going
to
get it. That's awesome. Years ago, out here in Australia, on the south side of Brisbane, there's a pub called the Alex Hills Hotel. This is back in 1998 or 97, it was. We're out there, the missus, me, and a couple of the other boys from working together, and we're rocking out to these Australian bands, getting out there, getting with it, and you know, we're all ordering big pints of lager and stuff. It's, you know, big night on the town. And all of a sudden, this weird band gets on, the three-piece band. And they had the bass player was literally no eyebrows, no hair. Just really weird. He's getting right into the bass. Really tall guy. He must be about 6'4", we thought, 6'5". And the dude started shouting all drinks for the bar and stuff like that. And it went, who is this guy? You know, and then we knew they were Americans, right? And going, whoa. And everyone started calling him dude. So no idea who this guy is. Anyway, we went, thanks, buddy. Here you go, mate. Thanks for the points. And he go, you're right, man. Who is this? So we still don't know if it's 100% true or not. But Dogstar, Keanu's band, were touring the south side. We were so drunk, mate, I have no idea if it's them or not, but they shouted the entire bar, Aussie Brews, and we went, it's the dude, Bill and Ted.
I love that show, Bill and Ted.
Oh yeah. And you know what? The third movie is on the way. It's officially on the
way. Really?
It's happening, yes. It's greenlit. And Keanu's already got the hair because he's doing John Wick, man. You know, like, I mean, look at the dude. He looks like he's 25 going on, you know, 67, but still out there, still doing what he does. Good on him.
Heck yeah.
Just amazing, isn't it? Oh. So Bill and Ted's, you know, and it's the search for more music, I guess, for those guys. But hot on the heels of that info, I have in my hands James Cameron's science fiction history. Now, this, of course, has George in there. George blows the lid off what he was going to do with, are you ready for it? The sequel trilogy.
Hey.
So this is information you want to hear. It's got all of his influences. Got the Flash Gordon, the Buck Rogers in there. I like me some Buck Rogers in there.
You heard it here, folks. You heard it here first.
That's right. Right back to Buster Crabbe. He was a big influence on the Star Wars, I'm telling you. You know? Now, one of the things George took...
I may need to get this book.
Yeah, you have to get this book. Obviously, it was AMC's Story of Science Fiction with James Cameron, and it's got Guillermo del Toro, George Lucas, Christopher Nolan, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Ridley Scott, and Steven Spielberg, all interviewed for what they... influenced by in the actual science fiction stories they grew up with, everything. And to be honest, a lot of it is Dune. Believe it or not, 2001 and Dune are the biggest influences here. But here's what George says. So he says, the next three Star Wars films, we're going to be getting in a microbiotic world, but there's this world of creatures that operate differently than we do. I call them the wheels. And the wheels are the ones who actually control the force. They feed off the force in the universe. So there you go. So what are the wheels?
I don't know. I don't know. And see, for me, that is one interesting storyline I'd still like more of somewhere. Whether you do it in a series or whether you do it in another sequel trilogy. But something about the wheels, the guardians of the wheels, if that matters. You know, I mean, we've had them talk about it. We've seen quotes from the Guardians, mm-hmm. but I would love to see some sort of series focused on the Guardians of the Wills and the Wills.
I agree, and I think it's a strong enough thing that they follow, because we've seen part of that in the Lost Missions with Yoda's cool TIE fighter. That TIE fighter is just awesome, you know. And the fact that R2 has been to Dagobah before. So he knew all about the Dagobah. That's right.
Well, and then you go back to Rogue One, and you had the Guardians in Rogue One. You already have thrown Guardians into it. You've thrown some deep force, some symbolism into Season 6 of the Clone Wars. I would love to see them take and go off on that a little bit with the Wills a little more. Maybe it's some sort of a monk-like group that guard the temples of the Force or the Jedi temples or whatever it is long before the Jedi existed. I would be okay with that. I mean, I wouldn't be bothered if they didn't do it, but I think it would be kind of fun.
I also want to see them really go back to one of the things that's in that temple in Akto, and that is simply the Prime Jedi. I think that's a storyline well worth looking at. And it's alluded to in the Last Jedi book. And the minute I saw that straight away, I said, now there's something whether they are going to do something with this, with Snoke, but it looks a hell of a lot like Snoke, that label in the middle of the pool of water, if you like.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, and the other thing I've liked, I mean, you mentioned The Last Jedi, you mentioned Octu. What about the book, The Weapon of the Jedi, right? Where Luke goes to, I want to say it's Demeron, but I can't remember the name of the planet. And I want to say Demeron, but I think I'm pronouncing it wrong. Mm. But he goes to a Jedi temple there. Then you read the Legends of Luke Skywalker. There are so many books out there that are a canon. And now in The Last Jedi, you're seeing Jedi temples. You can even go to the temple on Lothal in Rebels, right? I would love to see more temples throughout the galaxy. Mm. Each of them have a unique
a unique feel to them, a unique look. I would love to explore more of those temples somehow, some way.
I agree. That episode when Clone Wars, when they're going to get their crystals. Yes. That was amazing.
Yes. You're talking about on Ilum? When they went to Ilum? Yeah, see, I'm with you. I would love to see more of that, a whole lot more of that.
Well, I still remember that episode of Gendy Tartakovsky's "To Ilum, we must go."
Yes.
To Ilum, we must go.
Didn't he take Padme and R2 with him on that one?
Yeah, he did. But what I loved too, that Captain Tycho is sitting there trying not to say anything, and then Yoda keeps influencing him. Yeah, to Ilum we must go. We're not going to Ilum. To Ilum, he goes, I think Ilum would be great to go to. Let's go to Ilum.
And then I love Padme's response. Yoda, I don't think he needs your help. I was already going to suggest let's do that.
So, along with Star Wars, we have a huge franchise that's about to launch its first film since, obviously, the 1984 David Lynch film, which I still love for what it is, even though it's not what we're, obviously think of as the book. Now, Denis Villeneuve is going to give this bad boy onto the screen into two films. Split into two. We've got one casting so far for the role of Paul Atreides, but they're about to unleash the entire cast very soon of this bad boy.
You are excited about this. You have been telling me about this for months. So I know if there is no bigger fan out there who is ready for this to happen, it's you. And I need to read the book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, George read the book, and, you know, one of the things is it is a huge influence, along with many other influences that made Star Wars what it is today. I mean, I think more than anything, from the hero's journey of it, side of it, because it's very much in that strong Joseph Campbell myth making sort of thing. That's all Dune. It's huge. It's a trilogy as well, so it's really mapped out well. The first book is an actual trilogy to itself, as well as Dune Messiah, and Children of Dune are actually one, that's where that you get that telephone book, mate. It's huge. But everything, right down to be honest, at the heart of it, it is Lawrence of Arabia in space, is really what it is. It's a hero who is forced out into the wilderness to then meet, people that he's not familiar with, learn their customs, and become their true leader to freedom.
Wow. Yep, it's on my list of books. I need to read it. To read it. So every time I go to start a new book, Star Wars releases another one. So then I read another Star Wars book too.
Yeah, the other series, obviously for you Star Wars fans that are into, Star Wars being obviously your main influence, but science fiction out there. The other one is The Expanse, and I can't put it past the two authors that make up James S.A. Corey have done such an amazing job on this series. Now, I think they're up to, I've read the first four books myself, but they're up to, must be the seventh or eighth book now on the shelves.
Wow.
And the story of, the guys and particularly, the characters in this series are so real. The way the space itself is, created in the series on Netflix here in Australia, The Expanse, is just brilliant. I mean, we thought we're only going to get two seasons, but now they've got another one, and they found a new home for the show as well. And it really is truly one of the great series. And it's got its own Falcon in there, the Rocinante, as well. And that's a ship that's just like absolute pure gunship at the end of the day. But done so well is humans in space with a more realistic touch, a little more along the lines of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica, I suppose.
Wow.
Well, worth checking out.
Check that out too.
Oh, definitely, mate, definitely. What else can we suggest that is worth checking out? Oh, here you go. You don't know about this one. And it's big too. It's a big boy. That's right.
That is big.
Written by Peter F. Hamilton from the UK, which I've met. Very nice guy. The Reality Dysfunction. Now, this series is called the Night's Dawn Trilogy. And the huge books, like, here's the other bad boy. That's part two. But This is everything, like Babylon 5 mixed with Farscape and even deeper science fiction. This is space opera.
You said this is called The Reality Dysfunction?
The Reality Dysfunction. That's the first one. With living ships in it as well.
All right, I'm taking note. Listeners, if you're listening to this show, you should be taking notes.
That's right.
I'm taking notes. The Reality Dysfunction. It is going on my list of books to read right now.
And book two will be even more fun, particularly if you like Chicago gangsters.
Ooh.
Now, I don't want to spoil it too much, but I will say this. Now, it's worth it just for the read. Second book, The Neutronium Alchemist, is well worth checking out because, I'm going to say it anyway, Al Capone rocks up in space in the future.
Oh.
So can you just imagine Tommy guns in space taking on the bad guys?
Heck yeah.
Yeah, well, there
all
you
right,
go.
I just found it. I just found it and I added it to my list. That is going to be a book I'm going to read very soon.
And now we're going to take a quick trip before we finish up today into one of the many things that was influenced by Star Wars. And it also influenced Star Wars. And that is, of course, something starring Gil Gerard. Do you remember?
What is that? I'm looking. Hold on. What is it?
It is Buck Rogers in the 24th century.
Yes. I don't know why I couldn't see that, but yes.
It's amazing,
Buck
isn't
Rogers.
It? It's old series, and I've just picked up season two only a couple of months ago as well, which is that great series. Amazing.
Fantastic.
Now, the second series was nowhere near as good and only have about a third the budget. But, you know, we had the original Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers was there, of course. Many other great characters. And even Jack Palance turns up.
Hey.
Good old Jack Palance.
I need...
Can you imagine him as a Sith Lord?
Right.
Count Dooku. Jack Palance style.
Gosh.
The Force. It's Bana Bay. It's great. You know, like...
Okay, aside from our laughs and our conversation, this is another thing I like about talking with you is because there is always something new that I need to check out.
Oh,
you
yeah.
are well-versed. You have read a lot of books, and I love when you suggest things to me because suddenly they become, you know, now my book list gets longer and longer, and I keep reading. So I have my homework to do before we talk next time.
That's right. Here's another one, and this is all to do with Mr. George, and it's all to do with Mr. Frank. Because Frank was a good friend of this guy too. George got this guy out of his books for a little bit back in 1998 before release of some amazing prequel film. And his name is Mr. Terry Brooks. And of course, we're talking about
Terry
The Sword
Brooks.
Of Shannara. Or Shannara,
yep.
as we call it out here. Or Shannara, as some of them call it.
Well, I have read one of the Shannara books.
Oh, wow. Okay, which one was that?
The Elfstones.
Oh,
love
nice,
the Elfstones
nice.
Of Shannara.
Very cool.
One of my favorite characters. I mean, I kind of like the dark. The Changeling. The Changeling was, oh my gosh. That character was freaky and was just cool and dark. I love, yeah, that whole book. I need to read the rest of the series, but that book, The Elfstones, was magnificent.
Now, this is a series where you don't really have a Luke Skywalker or anything like that. They're all new characters as you go through it, except for Al-Anon. Al-Anon keeps rocking up and he just, you know, has a doze for about 500 years and wakes up and goes, whoa, it's time to do magic again. Yeehaw.
Did you know that he just wrote another book in that series just barely this year?
Oh my goodness.
Released
series?
It? Yeah, he released a new book in that series called... Oh, I'm looking. I think it was last year, but it's called The Fall of Shannara.
Oh, this might be the last one, maybe.
That's what I'm kind of thinking.
Well, I like this first one. Armageddon's Children that he did, which is a brilliant one. Back in 2000, he wanted to go right to the start of it. Now, what's interesting is he did a series that was set around normal times with witches as well. What people didn't know was that was all connected to Shannara as well.
Yeah.
But this is true.
I didn't know that either.
This is Mad Max with magic.
Yes, it is. Oh, that's totally. So I'm looking it up because you had me thinking. So it's called, I guess it's the fall. It's called the Black Elfstone. It's the second, following the Black Elfstone, the second book of the epic four-part conclusion to the Shannara series. So he's working on the conclusion to the Shannara series, and it looks like it's a four-part conclusion. So he just released the second one this year.
Oh, that's amazing. And the fact that this is now, too, on TV as well, being shot in New Zealand with John Rhys-Davies, you know, of course, yep. You know, from Indiana Jones, very famous for saying, yes, he's a French archaeologist, name of Beloche.
Yep.
And then, of course, you get that great bad edit where Harrison goes, Belloc! Belloc!
Well, and they released it. It was first released on MTV a few years back. It is now available on Netflix. It's for the hardcore Shannara fans, like you and like myself. I liked it, but there's parts of it I didn't like too much. I don't like what they did with the demons. It's a little weird. But the overall feel of the series was not too bad. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. It is on Netflix, but it started out on MTV.
Yeah, for me, being an Aussie and, you know, watching this, it was great. But then all of a sudden, you'd have an Australian soap opera star rock up, and then you're like, oh, you know, you get that cringe factor. Be like Bo and Hope from Days of Our Lives rocking up in Star Wars. You go, the Force, man, is really cool. Like, what? You know, and you just can't do that. You can't just take old mate from Young and the Restless and put them in, you know, Mad Max. You'd be like, what the hell?
Right. Well, the other thing I didn't like about the Shannara series on MTV is that they sexualized the demons.
Yes.
And I didn't like that. I did not like that at all. Because the books never went that far. I almost felt like they needed to do it to make it more interesting in the series. And I felt that could have been left out. I didn't like that.
No, that's right. You want demons. You get to look at Fury Road because you get somebody like Immortan Joe rock up there and goes, once again, we go down to Fuel Town with my demons, and we go down to Gush Town. You know, like it's. Of course, folks, what you're not seeing is that I've been. Poor old Alan's been chatting. We've had Mad Max rock up going, what the hell's going on, mate? You know, like, and.
Yes, you have tried to distract me.
And with the door for it.
Oh, but I'll have you know, it didn't work. I didn't get distracted, folks.
No, it didn't work. Now, you've got to let the folks know where they can find you for your writing, for your podcast, and where to catch up with you.
So I've taken kind of a backseat on a lot of writing. I've been writing a novel, and so I do and poetry. So I do have a personal blog that I do that for. It's called JediZog.wordpress.com. You can check that out if you want to. So I don't do a lot of writing other than there. But as far as podcasting goes, of course, there's Idiots Array.
Mm-hmm.
You can find that over on MakingStarWars.net. If the easiest way to find it is to just go to Making StarWars.net. Look in their podcast group, find Idiots Array. All of our episodes are there. And they all hold very well, too. I mean, like I said, we've been doing it 3 years. You can go back and listen to the first, second episode, and it's still good. And then the other podcast I do is an NBA basketball podcast called Jedi and Germs. You can find Jedi and Germs on Blog Talk Radio.
Very cool. And, guys, you got to check it out because this is, again, insightful, entertaining, and, of course, it's Star Wars. That's where you're going to find it. And, Alan, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
G'day, mate. How you going? This is Adam O'Brien, the Fantha from Down Under. And like George Lucas, there's another George out there. That is George Miller. And he created an amazing franchise by the name of Mad Max. On Fandom Podcast Network's Couch Potato Theatre, in a four-part episode series, I host Maximum Couch Potato, looking at all of the films in the franchise, along with Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel and Kyle Wagner. We look at each of these films. We've done 1979's Mad Max. We've also done The Road Warrior, or known out here in Australia as Mad Max 2. But soon, airing on the show, we have our look at Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, the huge international epic which teamed Mel Gibson and Tina Turner together and had an amazing soundtrack. So go and check it out. Our look at Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome on Fandom Podcast Network.
So a big thanks to Alan for being on the show. And now we get to chat even more Star Wars, this time with the amazing Darth Taxis. Now, Darth Taxis I've known for a little while now, and I think he does an amazing job with his two other co-hosts on Starships, Sabres and Scoundrels, covering, I think, some of the best reviews, in particular to comic books as well, because it's one thing I've been a little bit out of the loop when it comes to some of the Marvel comics, but the great thing about this is listening to their show, I can really get into where the story's heading and just what I've missed, I suppose, more than anything. But it's great chat. It's a well-produced show. You're going to go and check it out. And also, Darth Taxis and I talk a little bit of role-playing games on the previous show. So here's part two. I hope you enjoy it. And a big thanks to Darth Taxis for being on the show. We're here today to talk about the release next week of Solo, A Star Wars Story. And hell, it is an amazing film. I love it. I just love it so much. I want to chat about it all day. And I've got to ask you, Taxis, is this the kind of film you hoped from Ron Howard?
I was surprised and gleeful, just beyond my wildest dreams of this movie. I've been on record saying that, you know, why are you doing this to me? You know, why are you making me scared like this? And I gotta admit, I've had a little pucker factor leading into the movie. As I got closer to the movie, I started feeling better and better about it. One of my friends actually, though, kind of ran into one of the actors off just at an event and asked about it. And I guess he kind of interpreted the response as being they didn't think it was going to be very good. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, well, maybe that was just he couldn't talk about it, you know, because Lucasfilm's really, and rightfully so, they, you know, hey, non-disclosures, right?
Yeah.
So that was kind of in my back pocket going into it. I was going, oh no, I hope it's not right. But I was just blown away by it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like telling everybody, man, if you are not seeing this movie, go do it. I think the reason why it wasn't well received at first, I mean, at least just from the crowd wise, it was just a perfect storm. It was like, you know, super saturation of, you had superhero movies out. It was the beginning of summer still. I think kids were still in school when it came out. So they didn't, you know, I just think the timing might have been one of the biggest elements of it. And I don't know. That's why I'm excited for this, because I know the Lady Taxis has wanted to go see it. She hasn't had a chance to see it. And actually she said to me, I really want to see this movie, which kind of shocking. Yeah. Yeah. She's not really that big into the Star Wars as I am. So, I was really excited to want to go see it. And I thought I saw a blip there. They were going to release it, this past weekend for something on our Labor Day weekend. But then I got my dates wrong. I said, oh, it's 2 weeks away.
You gotta wait that little bit longer. You know, it's like with us out here in Australia, I waited 2.5 weeks to see it. Just too busy with work, and you know, I run a restaurant, so I'm, you know, as the business, you know, manager there, you know, you're constantly at the restaurant. Then you never get time to go and just sit in the movie theater and watch it. And anyway, I was driving home, and I realized, hey, the drive-in's open. Just found that
On the drive-in, they had a double Ron Howard. And what's so great about it, they had Solo, A Star Wars Story playing after Apollo 13.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's
so
cool.
You know, and I kind of thought, Tom Hanks, Star Wars, Tom Hanks. Nah.
I don't know. I could see him maybe, you know, it'd be great as if he was a villain.
Oh, yeah. Look, he could do it. I was talking to a few fellow fans out there, and one of the guys from Fanthatrax actually said, you know, you're most likely, you could definitely do it. But if you're looking at Hanks is a big Trekkie, huge Trekkie. So you might be more inclined to don the Federation jersey and go out there and stand in line like all the Trekkie guys go, well, before at the JJ films. And they, you know, the crew on those ships don't move. I mean, you watch Picard; his arms stay by. Sorry, righto, ready. Can I have an Earl Grey tea? Thank you. Number one, thank you. And if you watch it, when of course number one walks in, he does the lean in and just goes red alert, and then walks out. He does it every episode. The only one ever having any fun in that is of course Brent Spiner, Data, and mate, he's welcome in Star Wars anytime.
Oh yeah. Well, he does have a little connection to Star Wars now because can't remember his name, but he was in the first season, Rebels, if I remember correctly.
You know, he was great, yeah. And he was also one of my favorite characters in Independence Day in its sequel.
Oh yeah, yeah. I forgot that he was in that. Yeah. Plus, I heard he's a good cut up.
It's kind of fun. Brilliant. But this film really did surprise, didn't it? I mean, I went in thinking, okay, well, it's going to be, you know, not quite Rogue One good, but to be honest, I think it's on a par with Rogue One, if not better than Rogue One. Rogue One was very dicey when it came out to whether people are going to take a film that's, first of all, not part of the Skywalker part of the saga. But I think, again, a film that really, you know, they killed everyone off. I mean, who does that? I mean, crikey. You know, it's amazing. And in this film, we get Solo, who, again, from the start, is still the used car salesman he always was.
Yeah.
I'll give you a good deal.
Angle. Right. You got a good feeling about this one. You know what I mean? It's like that lovable loser that's just always just, I mean, he kind of reminds me of one of my favorite phrases, I'd rather be lucky than good. Because he does end up just getting lucky so many times. I mean, he ends up with a princess for crying out loud. You know, think about that. But I have to say, one of the things that I really loved about this movie was Beckett.
Oh, his Beckett's character, great.
And that's why I can't wait because, you know, again, the wife is a huge Woody Harrelson, you know, P1. And which, by the way, did you know his dad has a connection with the initial... activity after the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, no. What's that?
His father is one of the, I'm going to say he was apparently homeless or something down in downtown Dallas at the time. And he's in those pictures as the police are investigating and everything.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Wow. It's one of those weird little backsides of history. But Beckett, his character... And I know you've got the visual dictionary there.
Mm-hmm.
I love his blasters.
Oh yeah.
And especially if you're a big Western nut like I am, you know, I just love the fact that they look like revolvers.
They do, and I just look at it. I mean, crikey, if they are, it's almost the size of those firearms you see in Looper, the Gats. Those huge, you know, and they're almost like Winchester rounds. They're big, I suppose, hunting handguns, I suppose you could call it. But, I mean, these are just...
Big Baby Colt one. And then actually, one looks like if you've ever seen a Taurus Raging Bull, that Blastech RSKF 44, it looks about the size of that thing. I mean, that's the thing I love about it. And it takes some tricks to spin something like that on your fingers like he was doing. I don't know if they...
Be doing weights.
How he did that. Yeah.
He's been doing weights. Because, I mean, you know what? It reminds me of that handgun in Alien Nation. It's like a Ruger Red Hawk with a 4.54 Casale round in it. You can only carry
yeah.
five in the chamber. And even Jimmy Kahn's like, whoa, this thing. You know?
That's exactly what the Raging Bull, it only holds five rounds. That's one of the things that made me go, oh, that's just like Alien Nation. That's so cool.
I love it. You know, it's, again, there's a film that needs to be revisited. Just
yes.
You know, I think it's great. And what I love about that little film is we watched that on Blu-ray, which has only been released last year on Blu-ray here in Australia. But the whole scene with Fedorchuk and the guys on the beach, they've just cleaned that whole... Because I think the DVD was quite a rough transition from the VHS to DVD. But that whole scene on the beach is just so clear, pristine and clean. It really shows up just the quality that a HD print has done. And again, it's just an entertaining movie. For a 90-minute cop film, that's what it is at the end of the day. Yeah. And you get the bad guy is Zod. Near before Zod.
Yeah, that's another one that I want to revisit, but that was kind of like some of my earlier development of, you might say, concepts of right and wrong, you know what I mean, is Alien Nation, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that was great.
It was.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, the other character that I liked in his team, before we really get Solo as part of it, and of course these are really to show off his skills as a burglar, really. I mean, that's what he's a hired gun, is Rio Durant and Val.
Yeah, yeah. Rio was really cool. You know, it's funny because you wouldn't think voice acting mm-hmm. really would be difficult, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's to be able to take something that's animated and make people believe that the voice is part of what that is. I mean, not only does it take all the acting chops, but can you imagine all the post-production sound work that goes into making this thing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Making sure that sounds like it's blending in with the environment, all the ambience and everything around it. And, you know, Jon Favreau, that's one of the reasons why I'm so stoked about the live actions, because, man, he gets Star Wars. I'm sorry. He and Ron Howard, in my book, they should just be allowed to do more stuff in Star Wars. Just, here you go. What do you want to do? You know, well, I'd like to do something about bacteria. No. What's next?
I mean, you look at it.
But you said anything. Well, you know, caveat.
well, I mean, and you know, one of the funny things is, still, people to this day don't get his character that he voiced in Clone Wars. Of course, we're talking about Pre-Vizsla. And just think about the name, Pre-Vizsla. Pre-Viz, which means before, you know, at the end of the day. And you think about it, the way that, you know, Mandalore was at that stage, he was moving towards a peaceful future. They were starting to move ahead, away from the warrior past. So what's Pre-Viz mean, really? It means the before. So this is what Mandalore was before this peaceful sort of English, and it was kind of like, well, he's running Concord Dawn. So at the end of the day,
yeah.
You got this is the old Pre-Viz, and then obviously got Satine, who's running Mandalore in a peaceful manner. So it's clever with the names again. Georgie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Also, the last part of his name, because he likes singing. La! He didn't really know that, but, you know, it was kind of one of those secrets nobody really talked about.
It was just there, wasn't it?
Also, he wore a girdle. That's right.
Mm.
You know? Yeah, as you get a little older, you know, it's kind of harder to fit in that armor. So, you know, you need a little Captain Kirk special.
Nice. Now, one of the favorite scenes in this film is, again, it's a Western, so you got to have a train. And, of course, we call it about the conveyance with those amazing troopers that we see on there, of course. What did you think of that scene? It was pretty cool.
It was really cool. I mean, it did have all the feelings of, you know, it felt like Firefly to me.
Yeah. Kind of,
you know? Yeah. Yeah. Because you've got the ship coming in. You've got all these kind of, it's just something constantly happening. You've got, oh, by the way, I oftentimes make jokes about, okay, how can we make these troopers look different? We'll put three eye holes in the mask. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I really like this design of trooper, and I think they're really trying to work outside of the box to really try to develop. It's funny. It feels like how in, I want to say more in Southern Cross, how there were so many specialized battle mecha
yeah.
for different environments and different terrain that you've got you know, you've got your general run-of-the-mill elite soldiers, which who are the stormtroopers, but then you're going to have your troopers that specialize in mountain, you know, in Arctic activity. And I want to feel like these guys would probably be, you know, taken from the snow trooper corps or something for additional trainings, you know, just to make sure that as a elite security force, kind of, you know, I mean, I guess the conveyances were all over the place, but, you know, that's what it feels like to me. I think they pulled off those troopers awesomely. The first time you really see Chewie and Solo. Oh, and is this where Chewie develops life death, Solo, at that scene?
I think so.
Because Solo saved his life, yeah.
Oh, without a doubt. Did you actually think it was him when you saw him fall in the pit?
You know, I didn't know what to expect. And I guess I'm kind of reconciling still Chewie eating humans. but if that's what happened, but I don't know. It's Star Wars. I mean, basically everything eats everything if you give it the chance, right?
Oh, definitely.
You know?
Oh, yeah. And I think you're right. I think that's one of the things is that at the end of the day, like it, whether figuratively or not, each prey will go down and try and eat what it can. In case point, of course, we have a certain star yacht with a certain new bad guy that we have in this film. Yeah. Of course, we've got Dryden Vos. Now, the minute I heard the name Vos, I'm like, oh, this has got to be Quinlan's cousin or Quinlan's brother. No such luck.
Yeah, it's the second S is silent on Quinlan Vos, but on this one, right? Or am I getting them backwards?
I might be.
I think they're actually spelled differently. Slightly.
Might be, yeah. But with Dryden, again, we get somebody who's an underling to Darth Maul, which I thought was very interesting.
That was cool. And I understood where they're going with it. You know, okay, so I've always had this one feeling that's like Darth Maul is one of the coolest characters that they've ever created for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And we're going to actually talk about that arc where he comes back in the Clone Wars in the next episode of Starship Savers and Scoundrels. But there's a little bit of a, you know, dang it, how can we figure out how to bring him back? We didn't realize how awesome he was going to be, you know? Mm. And so I've reconciled with that since, you know, I'm like, okay, it's part of the story. Okay, I get it. That's cool. A lot of people, like I got a phone call from my, you know, I guess you would say kind of part-time Star Wars friend, you know, who just watches it when it comes out. What was Darth Maul at the end of that? I don't get that. What was happening there? Now, what, you know? And so I feel like the scene where he pulls out his lightsaber to turn it on, that was like, hey, everybody, remember me? Zoom, boom. And, you know, just to try to let everybody know. But
yeah. But
from the moment I saw his foot in that scene, I knew who it was. I knew instantly. But, you know, again, we're kind of Star Wars nerds. But it was kind of a cool reveal, and it makes sense because he was still working in this criminal underworld at the time, trying to build up his own power base, you know, trying to rebuild it, which, you know, at the time I hadn't read the Son of Dathomir story, so I didn't know how he escaped the clutches of Palpatine from the end of Clone Wars. So I knew he had. I never wanted to go look it up because I wanted to read it myself when I found it. Probably the only thing that I ever kind of put my own spoiler filter up for, you know?
Oh, definitely. And I think one of the things is, too, that you know, it's such a surprise to a lot of people. The thing that tipped me off was that Ray Park had shaved his head. And and he likes his hair. So, you know, he likes having a little bit on top, you know? You know, he's always liking that little bit of hair. And minute it shaved it off, I'm like, oh, okay, he's doing this for a film, but is it the kind of film I'm thinking of? Because he was hanging around a lot of Lucasfilm people those couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden, nothing. You know, he went back to training and did what he did. But I don't think he's done anything like that since Snake Eyes with G.I. Joe, I think.
Yeah, and that was really cool that they brought him back to actually play that role instead of some sort of CGI incarnation. Love the mixture of the voice. You know, I just wonder if, and I'm remembering correctly, Sam Witwer actually did the voice, right?
That's correct.
Right? So I wonder why they did that mix and not just went back to Well, did Ray ever do the voice in The Phantom Menace, or was that a voiceover?
That was a voiceover by Peter, I'm going to try to pronounce the last name, Serafinowicz. I can't really pronounce it. There we are, but it's a UK actor. Yep.
Okay. So I guess that's something that, you know, it's not a slight or a front or anything like that, and that's fine. And Sam Witwer is kind of the voice of Maul now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But except for the fact that a lot of people kind of got confused by that whole thing, I thought it was a real nice cherry on top, you know, who's the real power player and who's... I mean, we've kind of had debates about this on different shows. I still don't feel like Maul was the great motivator for, Kira doing what she did. I mean, I just feel like there was a lot of space to where she could have set up something to make herself look like she had also died or something. You know what I mean?
I agree.
I don't know why. I know people have their different opinions about it and everything, but, and I know it's the storyline trying to propel it and make it, you know, like we said, it's like conflict and release, but I just feel like, you know, she could have gotten away with it, you know?
Oh yeah.
I feel like she went to Maul intentionally to try to stake her claim for power, you know, through him.
I think you're right. And I think the thing is too, the reason having Kira be such a big part of the story here is because she is what Solo in some regards will become. Although we know at the end of the film that she knows he's really a good guy at heart, and it's all an act that he puts on. And that's why he's so compassionate in the original trilogy, is because he is really like that. It's all a front. He has to put that front on.
Yeah, that's most true.
You know, which is interesting. Now, of course, we have his competition. And, you know, somebody that calls him Han, not Han. And of course, that is Lando Calrissian.
You mean Lando.
Administrator of this facility. So what'd you think?
That was amazing. What Don Glover did there, I mean, you never really took him, well, let me put it this way. I always kind of thought of him more of a gambler based again on the West End Games kind of stuff, you know, just how, and now we see exactly, you know, yeah, he's more of a gambler than a smuggler. He's trying to use the smuggling, I think, as a means to the end to get out of that life and do something bigger. But what do you think about his willingness to cheat?
I thought it was great. I think kind of knew it was going to be like that. I mean, I've read all the trilogy of Lando novels years ago. Wish I could revisit them, actually, whether I had a copy or not, be something. But I kind of knew everything that Lando does is a front. Even the Falcon. I do not believe the Falcon is brand spanking new like it looks. I think a lot of it literally is just a facial paint job, and the ship's always been horrid. It's always been, you know, something that's not well looked after. And so I think when you're seeing it go through the Kessel Run, that's just that facial stuff just been ripped off, ripped apart.
Oh, interesting. Wow. So that's kind of a parallel maybe, to one of the characters.
And it's pretty much what Lando is. You think about it, like between himself and his droid in this film, everything's ripped apart from him. Everything's taken from him.
Yeah.
And eventually, after, you know, the main thrust of the story, they lose it to Han, you know, and Chewie.
And it's, wow, you know, if you think about that, that's right, because even in the his droid was complaining to him, you know, that, I don't want to just say his droid, sorry, you know, L3 was complaining to him that, hey, what about this? We need this update to the, you know, upgrade to the weapons and defense system. And he's like, yeah, after I install a new mini bridge, you know, or something. He's just completely hedonistic.
Oh, it's brilliant. And of course, we get finally see Sabacc played. And to play Sabacc in the film, I thought was just amazing.
Yeah. Now, we'd always kind of grown up thinking that somehow the cards could electronically change and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like that? Did you feel like they could? Because would he have kept that one card up his sleeve if he could have maybe somehow hacked into the cards?
Oh, I think, you know, at the end of the day, it was going to be a cheat. No matter what he was going to do, you know, with his up his sleeves or vice versa. But I kind of wanted to see a more high-tech game, like you say. You know, somehow they're projected, maybe. I don't know, those cards. But, you know.
Like the foldable newspapers like you see in Minority Report or something, you know. To where it's all digital. I think that was in that movie but you could fold it up and stuff and take it with you. So it'd be like a bendable play card, but it would have that electronic aspect to it, you know?
Oh, without a doubt.
I didn't really get that feeling with that. I felt like they were just regular cards.
Oh, I think so too. And I think that's a big part of, like, the Sabacc itself, at the end of the day, it's, you know, a card game like no others. But at the same time, it's also interesting to see that Lando, like many of the other characters here, is, you know, willing to cheat, lie, connive, and do what he's got to do to get through. I do love that they've done that. But it also brings us to his main ship, of course, the Millennium Falcon. So what did you think of this redesign?
I thought it was really cool. I liked how sleek it looked. It was neat. And I thought the interior looked really wonderful. And I don't know. It's like, I guess he's better at, you know, not maintenance, but cleaning than Han is. You know that, or Han's just putting it through the ringers, you know. And some people are like that, you know. They're not too big on the way things look. They're just concerned about whether it runs good or not. And, you know, Lando, he's like spitting polish on the inside, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that
was pretty cool.
You know, the ship itself, I'm looking at some of the interiors the other day and just sort of versing off what Han did with the ship, you know, and at the end of the day, it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, when you hand down a car, you know, do you keep it all pristine? Do you take a seat out? Do you do this? Do you change the wheels? You know, we've got all these upgrades that we do with cars and stuff like that. And I think, again, Han's just one of those people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what I look at. It's like he's more concerned with making sure that it does what he wants it to do than making sure that, you know, well, I don't know, the stainless steel, you know, I guess lounge seating is, you know, shined up perfectly or something, you know. Especially, like, when you think about those pads that are on the entryways, you know, how they look so nice and new and clean here, but then whenever you, you know, go forward to A New Hope and they're kind of like a dingy green-gray kind of look to them, it's like, oh, you know, don't lick that. Just don't even touch it. And something growing on there, you know. This, you know, being in the restaurant business, this, the Millennium Falcon's not necessarily serve-safe compliant, you know. It's
that's one of the things that we see in there. There's, he's got a little mini bar, basically, in the middle of the Falcon. I love that.
Yeah, that's cool. But Hans, of course, ripped that out, you know, what's more important. That, now, how much of an aspect do you think Chewie had on wanting the dessert table?
Oh, I reckon that was a big thing, you know. Definitely a big part.
That was like when Pong came out, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They had to have the dessert table.
I didn't even think about that. The fact that, you know, when, you know, obviously this is a time when Atari had hit out, you know, 77, far out. Yeah, you're right, Star Wars. Yeah, it's a big, big influence on that sort of stuff, you know, the fact that they're all there, you know. And now that's bloody awesome. what are your thoughts on this? Is how it sort of racks up with the current films that we've had. We've had Force Awakens, obviously, Rogue One, Last Jedi, and Solo. How does this rack up for you in amongst those?
I'd have to say, okay, The Force Awakens had a oh yes, here it comes, oh yes kind of element to my excitement. Now, after seeing everything that's come out in the recent releases, I would say Han Solo's my favorite of the four, and I'd say Rogue One's a close second on there. Just because I don't have to feel so invested, I think, to watch them, you know? And the stories have been, well, I mean, I don't want to say concluded, but you could take Han Solo as just as standalone. That's it. We don't see another movie at all. I kind of hope we do, because I think that, especially if you keep that same creative team going, there's a lot you could do with it. And especially kind of resolving the Darth Maul storyline, or Maul storyline, you know, because that's still up in the air. But yeah. So I guess that's kind of how I reconciled it in my head. What about you?
Yeah, I think so too. I think for me, it's very much it. It goes definitely solo. I mean, that's without a doubt. It's my favorite of the batch. Rogue One and Force Awakens for me are tied. I mean, I love both of them for the reasons, you know, that obviously first one is rekindling that sort of where's Luke, all that sort of thing, Han Solo, rekindling that love that we have for those classic characters. And Rogue One, to a certain extent, is the setup of all that, a direct prequel to all that stuff that we love. But then I think Last Jedi, I like Last Jedi for what it is here and there, but I think it's a little disjointed for me to want to put it into the first or second spot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. So I think, you know, that's just what we're looking at. But before we wrap up, I want to get your idea on where you personally would like to see Episode 9 go. Time jump 5 years, time jump 20 years. What would you like to see, and how would you like to see this trilogy resolve itself?
I'll take, I think the 5 year time jump is the one that works out best for me, because I think you could still have Daisy Ridley look as young as she does and it still come across as believable. Like, she could still look, you know what I mean? If you go 10 years, I'd kind of expect her to look a bit older than she is. At least, especially since they had the last two movies go back and back to back together. I really envision the rebuilding of the Jedi Order at some point, you know, with her. You know, maybe, I really hope we get, I would love to see, because ever since, you know, the Old Republic came out and that opening cinematic where all the Sith ignite their lightsabers and then all the Jedi, you know, they get into this big fight.
Yeah.
We've never had a mass lightsaber melee, even though they kind of alluded to one in Rebels, you know, with all outside the Sith temple where they found all the lightsabers and everything. And so imagine how, I mean, the Clone Wars, one of the coolest things about the Clone Wars movie to me was seeing all the Jedi ignite their lightsabers and then getting into a big battle with all the, you know, but that was fighting lasers, you know. This would be different because it'd be like Braveheart.
Or a game of footy.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, and even if it's just, you know, 12 on 12 or something like that, you know, Knights of Ren versus, you know, the new Jedi Order or something. Yeah, that'd be great. I really hope Rey's somebody. You know, I feel like back in Empire Strikes Back when, you know, Vader revealed he was his father, Luke's father, we all came away going, no, he's not. He's obviously lying to Luke. Well, guess what? He wasn't. And so now with Kylo Ren gaslighting Rey to a certain extent, he's like, you're nothing. You come from nothing. But honey, if you stay with me, I will get you that teddy bear you like, you know. How do we, and everybody automatically says, oh, well, obviously he's telling the truth.
Yeah.
The same people that claimed Vader was lying back then when they were kids just are so willing to say, well, of course he's telling the truth. Well, how do we know? I mean, he could be intentionally lying because he's the dark side. They deceive.
They do.
They mislead. They misrepresent all the time, you know? So whereas you've got, and he's running to the dark side, you know, as opposed to Vader running away from the light, you might say. I don't know.
A little bit like,
vice versa. I guess it's the same thing when it's all settled.
I think it's a little bit like Dooku in episode 2. You know, he's got, you know, Obi-Wan with a terrible fake beard, by the way, may I say. That still is a sore point for me. You know, George should have just kept him longer and not given him over to, was it Ridley Scott's Black Hawk Down? That's why, Ewan had to shave the beard. But surprisingly, his beard's back right now. I wonder. But they've got to do it. But what's interesting is you look at these, you know, like that situation where Dooku gave him the truth, told him the truth, and you know, again, it's that, you know, do you want to believe it? And it takes time to sink in. And I think that's very much like, obviously, the Vader "I am your father" speech, and a lot of people just don't have that sort of attachment to it, I suppose, until they've realized that, particularly Obi-Wan goes, oh, well, maybe he was right. Begun the Clone War has, you know. Again, the truth always there. So, But, mate, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been a trip down memory lane and also good to chat about, of course, Solo, which I still cannot imagine what it's going to be like on the TV here. And, crikey, well, you know, I might even break out the old projector. That might be even worth doing. You never know. but thank you so much for being on the show today, mate. And where can the folks catch you on the web?
Pretty much, if you look for at Darth Taxis, you can find me Twitter, Instagram. Mm-hmm. I have a Facebook account that's kind of neglected a lot, I would say. of course, you can find us on Starship Savers and Scoundrels social media. And hey, if I could plug one thing real quick that we're doing, we live near, or Dennis and I live near, a big cat rescue center called NSYNC Exotics. Now, at first, you might think that the link is taking you to a not safe for work site, but no, it's okay. And they have two tiger cubs, one that they've named Kylo Ren and the other they've named Kenobi, because everybody there is a Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to raise money to build a Millennium Falcon-shaped pool for them to play in, because tigers love water. Mm-hmm. We posted some videos of them playing together, and Kenobi was rescued from some smugglers that were trying to take him across the border. And he was about 15 pounds, and they resuscitated him, brought him back to good health. And Kylo Ren was born in captivity from two white tigers. And so, which is something that they don't condone at all. It's just when they rescued his mother, she was already pregnant. If they can get this pool built, they need about $30,000. They're really close, but they're just, I think this is the last week, and we've got some great prizes. If you follow our show link and donate through our page, we've got t-shirts, we've got some autographs from Vanessa Marshall, James Arnold Taylor available that they graciously gave us. I've got some artwork in the works, and Steve Anderson, I believe, donated something to as a prize. So really, it's about $10 US dollars gets you in the running for any of these prizes, and there's some cool stuff out there. Plus, it's also fun to help out these little tiger cubs here. Well, they're getting big now. Yeah, you don't want to play with the Bob Yarn with them. But so if you could go check that out. Links are out on our social media pages, Starship Savers and Scoundrels, also kind of known as S-Cubed Pod, or you might say Scooped Pod, you know.
That's it. You got to go and check it out, guys. And, of course, at the end of the day, if you've enjoyed our chat today, go and check out their podcast. And like I said, I listen to it on my daily commute. I spend about an hour in travel one way each day, so one way home. I also listen to it as well. So you guys have always been an entertaining show, and one that I truly look up to as great Star Wars content. Mate, Darth Taxis, thank you so much. Well, that's the end of another show here on the Phantom from Down Under. Hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll be catching you next Saturday for more Phantom Tracks Radio's The Phantom from Down Under, with a few dear friends of the show coming on for a chat about Star Wars. One of them all the way from Boston, who's going to be chatting about his blogs that he does for Star Wars, and of course some of the amazing work he does for podcasts and fan pages out there as well. There's a lot more coming your way here from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. I'm Adam O'Brien. May the Force be with you.